From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. I just read a book called Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. And if you like scary books, this one will scare the crap out of you. But it's not a fiction thriller, but rather a nonfiction report from journalist Ted Koppel, my guest this week. Ted Koppel, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
What you're saying in Lights Out is that a laptop in the wrong hands is a weapon of mass destruction.
Yes. I mean, what I'm saying is that the Internet, for all its many virtues, has also exposed us to something that the creators of the Internet many years ago just never envisioned. Nobody thought the Internet was going to be anything other than a device by which professors could exchange good ideas. So when the Internet was first designed, the notion of hacking attacks was never considered. And so now, in the aftermath of all of that, it is essentially impossible to completely defend the Internet against attack. And because our electric power grid is effectively controlled by and run by devices that operate on the Internet, the grid is vulnerable, and that means that potentially an attack on the grid and taking down all or part of a grid could leave tens of millions of people without electric power for weeks or even months at a time.
And in your book, you lay out how awful and terrible that would be. How likely do you think it is?
Well, what I think is truly irrelevant. I did what reporters, I think, are supposed to do, and that is I went to the smartest people I could find on the subject, and it is what they think. And there are, I'm afraid, remarkably well-plugged-in people in this country from the president on down. President Obama has twice in successive State of the Union speeches warned of the danger of cyber attacks on our infrastructure, singling out the power grid. Our former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta spoke of a cyber Pearl Harbor. The current four-star general who heads up CENTCOM, General Lloyd Austin, has said it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So again, it's not what I think, it's what all those people have told me.
Well, Ted Koppel, you discuss many of the causes of our vulnerability in Lights Out, including the state of television news. How has news changed, and how did it make us vulnerable?
Well, I'm not sure that I would go so far as to say that I was blaming television news for the vulnerability of the grid. What I am saying is that the nature, we've really come an awfully long way from the days when Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America. And these days, as I write in Lights Out, it's almost impossible to convince the American public of anything that it's not predisposed to believe. So the idea of, I cite as an example, the question of President Obama's place of birth. A fairly extensive poll was taken, and the question was posed in a way that should have made it very easy for people to say, well, can't be sure. The question, as I recall it, was something like, are you certain that the president was born outside the United States? And 37% of those who responded said yes. Now, if we really live in a time where 37% of Americans believe at this late stage, after all the investigations that have been concluded on this, that the president really wasn't born in the country and therefore is sitting in the White House illegitimately, then I think it's fair to say that it's very, very difficult to convince people of things they're not predisposed to believe. So convincing people that the electric power grid is vulnerable to a cyber attack and that it is really an issue that transcends partisan politics. This is not something that ought to divide liberals from conservatives or Democrats from Republicans. It's something we need to discuss in a national conversation, because there are things that can be done, if not to absolutely defend the grid, at least to prepare people better than they are currently prepared for the consequences of a grid going down.
Well, I want to follow up on that in a minute, but let me ask you another thing about TV and TV news. Jimmy Kimmel, it's an entertaining program, but do you ever just like get angry when you see that there's nothing remotely like Nightline on the networks anymore?
No, I mean, I'm enough of a realist to understand that because of the explosion of media, because of the fact that it's no longer just the three major networks competing against one another, you've got all the availabilities on satellite television, cable television, what's available on the internet itself. I understand that the need to be competitive is just far more severe than it ever was over the almost 26 years that I did Nightline. And therefore, what the network has concluded is that it needs a program that is a little more entertainment-oriented than the old Nightline used to be, and that's what they've got.
Not that Nightline wasn't entertaining. I always found it very entertaining.
Well, that's kind of you, but you're a geek.
that's probably true. In your book, I'll just follow up one more thing about TV. In your book, Off Camera, you kept a journal of the year 1999. You remember that book?
I do. I wrote it.
Yeah, it was a good book. And you said something in there that you said that ABC had News had made a decision, along with other networks and other news outlets, to stop collecting their own election returns and to all agree to accept one feed. And I was thinking about that a year later when, in the election of 2000, do you think that was one of the things that was responsible for the debacle of the 2000 election, when it kind of fell upon Gore to concede rather than simply say it's too close to call, let's count the votes?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that really was, the election was so close in Florida, and everything was hanging quite literally on how Florida turned out. I think even if all of the networks had done their own polling and their own returns, it probably would have ended up the same way.
Well, you know, our political thinking, you know, is really divided, as you were saying earlier. But it's interesting how in the 60s, it was the left that was, you know, distrusted the government and questioned authority and all that. And now it's the far right that distrust the government to the degree that they become the preppers, the people that you talk about in your book who are preparing for disaster.
Well, I wouldn't call all preppers people of the far right. In fact, what really distinguishes preppers from survivalists, I think if you talk about survivalists, you have images of people building their own concrete bunkers and they're waiting for the black UN helicopters to show up. That category of people, I think, does belong in the far right. Preppers tend to be far less partisan. And you have preppers of the left and preppers of the right. Essentially, a prepper is nothing more or less than someone who is prepared for catastrophe, whether that catastrophe happens to be a personal one, that someone in the family dies or loses a job, or whether that's a natural disaster, or whether it's the kind of thing that I'm writing about in Lights Out, is really beside the point. Preppers are just people who are not ready to rely on the federal government to take care of them. And the reason I spent time with them and on them is because I found in talking to people who have the responsibility of helping people in times of crisis in the federal government, that there really is no plan for what I'm writing about.
Well, I mentioned earlier, Ted Koppel, that your new book, Lights Out, is really scary, and you did that on purpose. You want to scare me and everyone who reads your book to scare us into action?
I want people to understand that what I'm writing about is not just a sort of far-off hypothesis of something that theoretically might happen, but don't really sweat it because it probably won't. I've come to the conclusion, based on conversations with people whose opinions I value and trust, that this is very likely to happen.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. We're talking with Ted Koppel. His new book is called Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. I had a friend who was positive that the Y2K crisis was going to occur, and he filled his garage with stuff and was extremely well prepared for that one.
Yeah. Was your friend the former chief scientist of the NSA? Was your friend a former defense secretary? Was your friend the commander of CENTCOM or the president of the United States? I'm not sure that I'd put what happened before Y2K in the same category. I'm really not. I understand that a lot of people in government and even in positions of authority believed that all of our computers might go down in the year 2000.
It might happen. Yeah.
It might happen, but I don't think the predictions were quite as firm and dire as the ones that I write about. And again, ultimately, the wonderful thing about this country is people can make up their own minds, and if they don't want to become more prepared, that's entirely up to them. But I think the job of journalism is to look into issues like this and at least make the public aware of what's out there. And I think in this instance, I mean, I talked to Janet Napolitano, who was for almost 5 years Secretary of Homeland Security, and when I asked her about the likelihood of a cyber attack on the grid, she said, you know, very, very likely, 80 to 90%. You know, she's not given, this is a woman who is now the president of the University of California. She's not given to making sort of wild predictions just for the fun of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about how we got here. To what degree did deregulation add to our vulnerability?
A great deal, because the deregulation of the power industry, the electric power industry, created a system under which there are now 3,200 different companies. Not to get too wonky on you or your audience, what happens, what is essential about the generation and the transfer of electricity is that in order for the system to survive, there has to be a perfect balance between the amount of electricity that's generated and the amount of electricity that's consumed. The only way to keep that in perfect balance at all times within that system of 3,200 different companies is through the Internet, through what are actually called SCADA systems. These are supervisory control and data acquisition. What they do is make sure that that balance is maintained at all times. If somebody, if hackers get into that SCADA system, and NSA experts have told me that both the Chinese and the Russians are already in that system, they have the potential of taking it down pretty much at the stroke of a key. Now, as long as it's just the Russians and the Chinese, that's actually not the worst news in the world, because we have so many interlacing and interlocking relationships with both Beijing and Moscow that they are unlikely to do it. As you go down the scale of capability, though, you go up the scale of likelihood. The Iranians, somewhat less capable than the Chinese and the Russians, more likely than the Chinese and the Russians to do it. The North Koreans, a little bit less capable, a little bit more likely. ISIS, not yet capable of doing it, although I've talked to some experts who believe that they could buy the expertise and get the equipment that they need essentially off the shelf. But a group like ISIS has absolutely no inhibitions about doing something like this. So they represent an enormous threat if and when they get the capability.
Okay, you're getting me all scared all over again, Ted Koppel. Why do you think people like why do you think people do these things, the things that ISIS did or 9/11 or some of these things?
Well, I mean, you know, why do we have wars? Why do people bomb each other? Why, you know, ultimately, the history of mankind is a history of warfare, and it may have begun with clubs or, you know, sharpened sticks and graduated to lances and swords and bows and arrows and ultimately, you know, explosive devices. The fact of the matter is, as long as there are weapons that can be used by one person or one group or one nation against another, they're going to be used. And as I say, the tragedy of the Internet is it was designed for such positive intent, or with such positive intent. And the fact that it can be used, and we have evidence of this every single day, quite literally thousands of times, that it can be used, you know, for grand larceny, that it can be used, as the Chinese did just about a year ago, to vacuum up millions of personnel records from Americans who worked at the CIA and worked at the Pentagon and worked at the State Department. You know, it's just inevitable. If a weapon is there at some point or another, it's going to be used.
Well, speaking of weapons, what part does the proliferation of guns play in the scenario you describe in Lights Out?
Well, the fact that we have 300 million guns in this country and the possibility, even the likelihood, that tens of millions of people will be deprived of everything they need to live, not just comfortably, but to live at all, food, water, heat, lighting, cooling, refrigeration, the ability to dispose of, in a city, the enormous quantities of human waste that are generated every day, is inevitably going to result in many, many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, potentially leaving an urban center and moving out into other parts of the country, seeking not just shelter, but light and food. To the extent that they have the money to pay for it, all well and good. To the extent that there is enough available food to feed everyone in those places, and the influx of potentially hundreds of thousands or even millions of domestic refugees, all well and good. When the food runs out, when space runs out, when shelter runs out, you have a situation that you can watch unfolding right now in Western Europe, where quite literally millions of desperate people are looking for shelter and food and a place to settle, because they are fleeing intolerable conditions. Am I suggesting that Americans fleeing from one part of the United States to another part of the United States is going to be identical to that? I'm not, but I am saying when people are desperate and when those who have the food and those who have the ability to shelter themselves don't have enough to go around, and you live in a culture that has 300 million guns, the guns are going to play a role.
We're chatting with reporter Ted Koppel. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. You talk a lot about the Mormons in Lights Out. You went and spent some time in Salt Lake City.
I did.
And what did they teach you about this situation?
Well, the Mormons are a people who for almost 200 years in this country were subject to not just enormous prejudice, but were tended to be driven from one state to another state until at one point they had a city in Illinois that was almost the size of Chicago. But their leader, Joseph Smith, their prophet, and his younger brother Hiram, who was his chosen successor, were imprisoned and killed by a lynch mob, and then the group led by Brigham Young made their way out to Salt Lake City, and over the course of that time, and since then, Mormons really have become it's almost a part of their it is a part of their culture that they are prepared for the worst. And so Mormon families are encouraged to have a 3 to 6 month supply of food in their homes. The Mormon hierarchy has ensured that there is enormous food production and production of all necessities from Mormon farms, Mormon apiaries where they have beehives and generate an enormous amount of honey. They have herds of gigantic herds of cattle and heifers to generate dairy products and meat. The Mormons are prepared, and I cite their example in the book, not because I think that what they have done can easily be duplicated. It can't. But they do provide some examples of what people can do for themselves and as communities, which I think is worth looking at, worth studying, and in some cases worth copying.
So do you think the internet genie is out of the bottle? Is there any way to roll it all back to, I mean, you and I both lived in a world before all this happened.
Yeah, and our great-grandparents lived in a world before automobiles killed 50,000 people a year in this country, as they did during the 1970s. And, you know, we still kill 25,000 people a year on our highways. Is anyone suggesting that we give up the automobile? We're not. We are prepared to pay a terrible price sometimes for conveniences that have simply become irreplaceable to us. The automobile, the truck, the bus, the motorcycle simply falls into that category. I can't imagine if we were fighting a war right now and losing 25,000 young men and women every year, that there wouldn't be a tremendous uprising in this country saying, let's end the war. Let's get out of wherever it is. But because of the great convenience of the automobile, we're prepared to put up with that kind of an annual sacrifice. And I think the internet has pretty much gained that same kind of stature and standing in this country, where it is now so much interwoven into the way that we do business and into the way that we communicate. The many conveniences that the internet provides us, you know, whether it's Siri on our iPhones, or whether it's the ability to simply plug a location into a GPS system, all of that comes to us by virtue of the internet. It's something that carries a multitude of blessings, but I'm simply pointing out that it makes us vulnerable in another area.
But the people who live in the urban areas are much worse off. I mean, if you're living in New York in an apartment on the 25th floor, you can't really have a herd of cattle or.
No, in fact, it's difficult enough even to have a food supply. But you can have something. I mean, there are things you can do. But you're absolutely right. People in our rural areas are much more capable of surviving an event like this. I mean, for the simple reason, if you're living out in the countryside, you can have an emergency generator, and you can have a sufficient fuel supply to keep it going for a very long time, and with that generator, you can generate enough power to keep yourself, if not totally comfortable, at least you can survive. And people, people tend to hunt in our rural areas. They can fish in our rural areas. There is water available in our rural areas. The city dwellers are going to have a much harder time surviving something like this. And if you were to knock out the power in a city like Kansas City, where I am right now, or in Chicago or in New York, the consequences would be grim.
And despite this grimness, Ted Koppel, I really enjoyed reading Lights Out. I don't know if enjoyed was the right word because, you know, you scared me. But at the same time, it was like an extra long episode of Nightline. Will you be writing more books?
I don't know. Let me get this one behind me first. And right now I'm traveling around the country talking to people like you.
Yeah.
In an effort to get people to buy the book and read the book. So let me get through with that before I start thinking about what's next.
Well, I'm so thankful that you decided to drop by from the bookshelf and talk about Lights Out. Ted Koppel, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
That's all the time we have for From the Bookshelf this week. I hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Ted Koppel. His new book, Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.